All right. Hello and welcome. Hello and welcome. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Otis Landerholm. I'm the founding attorney here at Landerholm Immigration APC, where we fight for your American dream. Thank you for being here. It is a beautiful Tuesday morning here in the Bay Area. I'm happy to be here with you today from my office in Oakland, California. My name is Otis Landerholm. And you are joining me right now live on the Empowered Immigrant Live. All right, so welcome. Our topic today is immigration news. Specifically, we're sharing about medical issues including obesity and diabetes and other chronic issues will cause public charge denials of immigration cases. All right. And so tune in. We're going to talk about this. This is news. All right. So welcome and thank you for being here. Remember, the Empowered Immigrant Live is here to train, teach, inspire, and empower immigrants to make the most out of immigration laws and to make the most out of their lives. Today, our theme is the latest immigration news, medical issues, which will cause public charge denials. Okay. And so tune in for that. And as we talk about that, if you have questions, please feel free to submit your questions. I'll do my best to answer them all. And my question for you is, do you want to get a green card? Do you want to get citizenship? Do you want to apply for asylum? Do you want to apply for a U visa or VAWA? Do you want to at least figure out what the best strategy might be in your situation or what the best option might be in your situation to improve your life through immigration laws, through an immigration process? Because if so, go for it. And if so, I'd love to help you with that. All right, my firm is on a mission to win 10,000 immigration cases in the next 10 years. We would love for your case to be one of them. All right, so thanks for everyone for being here on this beautiful Tuesday morning. And if you're watching this afterwards, then thank you for watching it afterwards. And as I'm going, if you have questions, please feel free to submit your questions. Just do that by typing in the chat or in the comments section, and I'll do my best to answer each of them. Okay? So thanks so much. All right? And welcome. Welcome to the Empowered Immigrant Live. All right? Okay, so public charge. You know, first of all, this announcement that came out on November 10th, by the State Department, it's not a huge surprise, right? The reason for that is that in the last Trump administration, there were huge changes to the public charge inadmissibility ground. There were whole new forms created, which were challenged in court and then stopped, right, in court. And so to see some of this now really isn't a big shock. But still, I want to explain it, and it's important that we understand it, right? If you're going through a green card application process, these changes could affect you, okay? So let's talk about public charge inadmissibility. The Immigration Nationality Act says that a person applying for a visa or for a green card or for adjustment of status can be denied if they are found, and the words are, likely at any time to become a public charge, all right? If they're likely at any time to become a public charge, they can be deemed inadmissible. And so so that's what you got to know. And so in the law, in the act, it says that the government must consider minimum factors that are in the statute. And those factors include age, health, family status, all right, assets, resources, financial status, and education and skills, okay? And so because of that being in the law, you know, there's no surprise that the Trump administration is using that as a way to put extra scrutiny, right? The Trump administration has a pattern of using any ambiguity or any area of the law where it can increase the challenge, the difficulty for people to apply for and obtain immigration status. All right, and so on November 10th, the State Department released new guidance on the health conditions that would cause a person to be inadmissible under the public charge doctrine. All right, and so the State Department is saying that expanded conditions, including diabetes, including obesity, including cardiovascular disease and respiratory disease, neurological, mental health disorders, all right, cancers, right, metabolic diseases, neurological diseases, all right, each of these can be considered and will start to be considered when people are applying for their immigrant visas. And so, and what the guidance will start to question is whether the applicant has, quote unquote, adequate financial resources to cover the costs of such care over somebody's lifespan, all right, without seeking public cash assistance from the government at the government expense. And so that's a difficult thing that you're asking an immigration officer to do, right? In the past, there was the medical exam and there's the I-864 to see your level of financial support, okay? And those two things were sufficient. But now with this, it's like you're asking a government officer to make a determination into the future that says, okay, does this applicant have adequate financial resources to cover the cost of any medical care that they may incur over their entire expected lifespan without seeking government expense? All right? And this inquiry applies to immigrant visas, family or employment-based immigration processes. It is worth noting it does not apply to some people, all right? It does not apply to VAWA applicants. It does not apply to asylum applicants. It does not apply to TPS, if you're applying for TPS, all right? There's a whole slew of folks that can apply for certain types of immigration benefits that are not, that don't have to worry about this necessarily. But if you are applying for a green card, whether it's adjustment of status or especially right now through the State Department, then you got to be mindful of this, all right? And so, so if you are consular processing, especially if you are consular processing a family-based green card or an employment-based green card, you want to be cautious about your medical appointment. You want to be cautious about your medical history. They will start to ask you more and more questions about your own health, right? They might even issue RFEs or requests for additional evidence regarding any medical issue you might have, okay? You will want to share your medical history with your lawyer, and you will want to have a game plan in place for how you might pay for any medical attention that you might need. And you might need to be ready to explain how you will not need to rely on government assistance to cover your medical bills. Got it? Got it? Those are the changes that have happened. That's the latest news. Thank you for being here. Thank you for watching this. I hope it's useful and helpful. The thing is if you're going through this type of process, don't go through it alone. All right, don't go through it alone. And just because, like what this is saying is, if somebody has medical issues, it does not mean that you're automatically not eligible for a green card. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is, if you've got medical issues, you might need to demonstrate the ability to pay for the medical help that that issue might cause for the foreseeable future. And that's the issue. All right, it's a money issue. All right, And so the best advice, as I said, is don't go through this process alone. Get support, get a team behind you, and let's look at it, and let's look at your specific situation and see how we can offset it and how we can maximize your chances of winning, all right, even despite it. Okay? So that's what I got for that topic. And now I see that we have been getting some questions. So that's awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you for your participation here. So my first question this morning comes from Alefem. And you say, if my asylum immigration case was dismissed, can a citizen's sister help me to adjust status? You know, thank you. Thank you for asking this question. Usually not. The problem with sibling petitions is they take years. All right? I mean, if you look on the visa bulletin, right, I think the quickest sibling petition is like 14 years. And the other problem with it is you have to be in current valid immigration status at that time, 14 years in the future, and never have been out of lawful status in order to use that petition. Now, if you're in asylum proceedings, hey, it's possible, theoretically, that your asylum case could last 14 years, or depending on what your country, which country you're from, it might take even longer than that, right? But that's like, there are so many other ways that might move faster than that. You know, marriage to a U.S. citizen, perhaps, or, heck, even a change in the law might happen quicker than that. We'll see. But if you have an asylum application pending and you have nothing else, then sure, absolutely. Have your U.S. citizen sister file a petition for you. It'll be pending for years and years and years and years and years. And then long term, maybe you could utilize that petition. Okay? I hope that's helpful. All right, Luna Baby, I see your question here. You say the I-130 aprobada, I-212 waiver aprobada, I-601A negada por ausencia en el 2004. Sometí una moción de reapertura, me la negaron. All right, well, sorry to hear that. Sorry to hear that. So you had your I-130 approved, you had an I-212 approved, which is very interesting, but then you had your I-601A denied because you didn't appear at a hearing in 2004. You submitted a motion to reopen, and it was denied. Really sorry to hear about that. The best strategy in your case is to do a second opinion, to re-request all of those records. Let's look through them very, very carefully, and let's really look at that motion to reopen and why it was denied. And, and the I-601 and why that was denied, and see what's the best solution. Okay, la mejor solución para usted es mandar pedir todas las follas, todos los records, estudiarlos bien y luego ver si hay otra alternativa, tal vez para mejorar su I-601A, el perdón, o tal vez para resometer una moción de reapertura. All right? Anyway, I answered that in Spanish because your question was in Spanish, but hopefully that's clear for you. All right? All right, Mohammed, I see your question here. What should I do? It's been 9 months after our interview and no decision yet. Okay, you had your interview 9 months ago, no decision yet for an I-130 and an I-485. Any suggestions, please? Well, so there are suggestions. You could sue them, all right? You could sue the government, file a mandamus case, and request that they adjudicate it. 9 months is semi-common. All right, it's semi-common. It's not like, it's not totally abnormal. My best first step would be to request all the records, read it carefully, and let's see if we can understand why, what may have caused the delay. And then after that, we can start doing inquiries, maybe do a congressional inquiry, and if those things don't work, then seriously consider suing them. You know, file a mandamus or an APA case, saying that they are unreasonably delaying their adjudication of your case. Okay? So, and if you want help with those things, feel free to contact my firm and we'd be happy to help you. Okay? All right, let's see. Mark, let's see. Caro Mora Rios, you say, can someone with a double entry and married to a U.S. citizen adjust status? What do you mean by a double entry? So here's the way it works, right? If you had, if that person had on their first entry more than 365 days of unlawful presence, like if it was an unlawful entry and they stayed in the U.S. for more than 365 days, or if they were deported and they left, and then after leaving they re-entered unlawfully, then they that's a double entry, right? But that's a double entry with more than a year of unlawful presence, and both entries were unlawful. In that situation, that's a permanent bar, all right? So then you can't adjust status. If those both entries were lawful and on a visa, then sure, marriage to a U.S. citizen can fix it, and even if you're out of status now, you can fix it, all right? And so it depends on what you mean by double entry, but hopefully I just explained that clearly enough here. All right, Maria Lacerda, you say, can you explain about people who applied for VAWA, T's, U's, and how they can apply to state health insurance? Yeah, yeah. So if you have a U visa or a VAWA case or a T visa case, and if you have a work permit through that VAWA case or T visa or U visa, then certain states, for example, the state of California, Medi-Cal, right, from the state of California, certain states can allow you to obtain state health insurance to cover your basic medical needs, all right, if you have a work permit and a Social Security card through that immigration service, through that immigration case, all right? Other states do not allow that, all right? And so that is the way it works. You've got to, and you can go to the state insurance provider and ask their requirements and show them your status and show them your work permit and show them your approval notices. And if they have additional questions, they could talk to your immigration lawyer. And the insurance provider can give you guidance as to what the qualifications are and how to qualify for the medical insurance through your state, whichever state you're in. Okay? Good question. Let's see. Luna Baby, you say, ahora sometí la apelación. Okay, I got that. So you're appealing the denial of your motion to reopen. So that can be a good approach, and that's difficult. Right? It's difficult to win. It can be a good approach. I have won the appeals of denied motions to reopen. Sometimes the judge just flat out gets the law wrong when they denied your motion to reopen. And so sometimes that appeal is a good strategy. I hope you're working with a good attorney. I hope your attorney knows what they're doing. Appeals to the BIA are not easy. And appeals of motions to reopen that have been denied are not easy, but I wish you the best of luck, and, you know, if my office could help you in any way, feel free to reach out, okay? All right, so Jules Moniz, you say inadmissible at renewals. I don't know what you mean by that. Renewals, you're renewing maybe a green card, or you're renewing maybe a work permit. Typically, when you're renewing a green card, for example, through an I-90 process, you don't have to be admissible, right? You've already been admitted if you already have a green card, unless you're out of the country, right? Then you have to be admissible upon re-entry, especially if you've been out for more than 180 days. Jules Moniz, inadmissible at renewals? Typically not. You don't have to typically worry about this when you're renewing something. The question for inadmissibility is at the time that you are first seeking admission, which is a term, right? Adjustment of status, applying for a visa while you're outside the U.S., right? Those are the main times when you're applying for a visa or when you're applying for adjustment of status that you are, quote unquote, seeking admission. And so there you go. All right. And when you're entering at the border with a visa, you're seeking admission there as well. All right, good. Edet Antoine, I see your question here. What can you suggest I do when the I-485 is reopened about 1.5 years through a VAWA approval and there's no decision yet? Interesting. You could sue them, right? That's a delay litigation, mandamus or APA case, Administrative Procedures Act case in federal court. It's a big deal, all right, to do that. You're suing the government, saying they're unreasonably delaying your case. But I wouldn't start with that, right? And so in your situation, the way to start is we want to run all your records so we're clear on the history. We want to make sure everything was done properly. We want to make sure if we push and sue that you have a strong case to be approved, right? So we want to run out and request and review carefully all your records, amend anything that might need amending, right, even before we do that final push. Then we want to do what's called a congressional inquiry, because if we can get a congressperson to help us try to push USCIS to moving your case forward, that's less expensive, simpler, and sometimes will work. And then the final thing is we can sue the government, right, if we're ready to do that. So, and that's up to you, and that's up to your case, and we would have to really look carefully at your case and advise as to whether or not that's a good idea. Okay? All right. Thank you all very much. Let's see. I see one here on TikTok. Let's see. Joni Chila, what's your suggestion for someone married to a citizen but has multiple entries 20 years ago? Okay, that's a good question. That's a good question. It depends, right? It depends on whether those entries were lawful or not. By the question, it makes me think that maybe you were not, you didn't enter the country lawfully. I get that. So then the question is, were you caught on your entry? Were you ever returned to your home country? Were you ever deported on any of those situations? Like, we've got to understand, like, how much time were you in the U.S. between those entries? Because, again, the way the law works is if you had more than 365 days of unlawful presence when you left, right, 20 years ago, when you left, and then if you re-enter unlawfully, then you trigger what's called a permanent bar and you do not have a case, all right? You do not have a marriage-based case. And so the marriage to a U.S. citizen would not help you unless it's through cancellation of removal and you're in immigration court, or unless you're eligible for a waiver of one of the bars, or unless you are applying for something else, maybe a U visa or a VAWA case or something like that. VAWA can't waive a permanent bar with certain very specific exceptions, but it can waive unlawful presence, all right? And so there are suggestions, and there are ways to fix it, but the best first step is let's do a consultation, let's get to the bottom of all of these questions, and let's figure out what the best strategy would be in your situation. Okay? All right. I see some more questions coming in on TikTok. I love it. So let's see. MJM, you say, is it safe to apply for citizenship with a felony not related to guns or drugs with a governor pardon? Love that. Love that. Thank you for asking this question. Huge congratulations with your governor pardon. It is often very safe to apply for citizenship with a governor pardon unless, there are situations where you might not be eligible for citizenship even with a governor pardon. There are certain crimes that the pardon cannot work for immigration purposes. And so the best advice in your situation would be to talk it through with an attorney, with an immigration attorney, about your application for citizenship and let's review all of your record very carefully first. Okay? So, yeah, that's the way that works. And that's really great that you got the pardon. So well done. All right. I hope that we can use that and get you citizenship. I'd love to have you contact my office. I'd love to research that for you. Okay. And really, really get to the bottom of that. Okay. Let's see. Luna Baby, you say, una pregunta más. ¿Cuánto tarda en dar respuesta después de someter una apelación? All right. So this is a good question. How long does it take to get a response after you submit an appeal of a motion to reopen that's been denied? So what I will say is, in my experience, that type of appeal, if it's done well and if it's not going to just get dismissed, you're talking 8 months to maybe like a year and a half. All right? It's not fast. It's a slow process. And it's a year and a half if you've really had a lawyer that really briefed, that really put the arguments in there very, very well. And now it's like they've got to think about it. Like, maybe you have a case that really they would work. You know, the longer the appeal, the better the appeal is, the longer it takes. All right? The more easy it is for the Board of Immigration Appeals to deny your case, the shorter it is. Okay? And so it's almost like it depends on how good your arguments are. And that's just my experience. That's just my opinion. But yes, I would say somewhere between 8 months and a year and a half, pretty typical. Okay? All right. So Johnny Chila, you say you got caught 3 times, but you never made it in the U.S. So you got caught where? Just at the border and turned around? Well, then you don't have unlawful presence. Okay, so then if that's the situation, we still need to run all your records and just see where any of those times where you were caught, did they ever lead to quote-unquote deportations or expedited removals? Because if so, the unlawful reentry afterwards would trigger the permanent bar anyway. Okay? But if it wasn't a deportation, and if you never made it into the U.S., then there's no bar. All right? There's no bar. You would still you still aren't adjustment eligible, but you could do it with waivers. Okay? So anyway, feel free to reach out, Johnny Chilla. Thank you. Feel free to reach out. Give our office a call. I love cases like yours. If you're in the situation that I think you're in, would love to talk it through, and we can get to the bottom of that. Okay? Sweet. Let's see. I think I saw a few others here on TikTok. Let's see. No, I think I got them. Okay, cool. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all so much for being here. I really appreciate each of you. Thanks for your participation. Everybody that asked questions here, Luna Baby and Jules and Edette and Johnny Chilla and MJM and Maria Lacerda and Caro Mora Rios and Mohammed and Aleph. Hey, thank you so much for like participating and asking me your questions. I really appreciate that. That gives us some, you know, gives us something to talk about, right? That's good. And so thank you all so much for being here. I really appreciate each of you. If this was useful, if this was helpful, please give us a thumbs up or a heart or a like. If you know somebody that this could be helpful to, please share the content with other people. Share the love, spread the love to others. And you know, if you have a case that our office could help you with, hey, please feel free to give us a call. We're here to help. We'd love to help. All right. Thank you all so much. Make it a great day. Oh, I see one last question came in. Tumbleweeds are real. Great to see you here. You say, does being brought in for secondary inspection when entering affect AOS? Typically not. Secondary inspection at the airport is super common, right? Super common. And so, no, it doesn't mean that you're quote-unquote admissible or inadmissible. It typically doesn't affect an AOS case. But thank you for asking that question. It could affect an AOS case if after secondary inspection they deny you entry for some reason. That could affect things, but based on your question, sounds like that's not the case. All right, everybody. That's all I got for today. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate each of you. Make it a great day, folks. My name's Otis Landerholm. I'm the founding attorney here at Landerholm Immigration APC, where we fight for your American dream. And we'll see you next time on our next episode of the Empowered Immigrant Live. Take care. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.